Kapinski?
I'm digging deep for the problem. I don't see it. Does Declan have a problem with that? Al, do you have a problem with that?
Let's go to the text line.
Always happy to be the first, my friend.
All right,
youngest producer in the history of Hockey Day in Canada. First to do 2 days in a row on Sports 1440. I am happy.
Well, I had to have you on yesterday to talk about Bob Cole, and you did a brilliant job, and I thank you for that. And today I wanted to have you on because you, early on, like for some time, and it's not like you're vicious about it, but you have been a little bit worried about Stuart Skinner. He was always going to be a big story in this series, win or lose, but you have expressed concern going way back. If the Oilers lose tonight, or, you know, God forbid they go down 3-1, I don't know what would happen in this city. Do you see a scenario where Calvin Pickard starts a game in this series?
Oh, wow, that's a good question, and I haven't thought about it. I would say I think that would be a very long shot, but I don't think it should be that long a shot, and I'll tell you why. Teams play differently in front of different goaltenders, and I think a way to get the Oilers to play differently, it's drastic if you needed it and required it. If you changed your goalie, I think you would get a different defensive mindset.
Interesting.
Yeah, that was a lot of thinking for me. There's some smoke in the room right now, but I like the way I thought that through. I think that's possible. You put Pickard in, you're going to get different defensive play and probably better defensive play, at least for that one game.
It does sort of shock the brain, right? Like when it works. It's like changing coaches when let's say they're down 3 Cobb, and then you bring in the other goaltender, and it's like, well, hell, man, we got to support this guy because, you know, we have to let the other guy down. I always find hockey players to be the nicest group of athletes ever because they're always about, you know, team, and we let the guy down and the coach got fired and it's our fault. And I do think there's a rally around the troops kind of feel to changing the goalie out.
100%. And I'm not sure it's a terrible thing. I mean, in theory, we should play the same every night, no matter who's between the pipes. However, I do know, and I've seen it happen, where you can see a team elevate simply because they want to protect the guy who's in the net tonight. Maybe he doesn't get that many games. Maybe he's been on a bit of a struggle streak. Maybe it's his first game in the NHL. Maybe he's towards the end of his career and we want to throw him a bone at the very end. I think there's a million different reasons, but you can see teams play differently in front of different guys. And you're right. It has to do with personalities. I mean, I got to be honest. I've never played hockey professionally, but I'm going to play a lot harder in front of a guy I like than in front of a guy I can't stand.
Yeah.
I can tell you that right now. And I just think that's human nature. So if you're in goal and you're struggling, I'm going to work a little harder for you, Al. It's just the way it is.
I think that, you know, like, I mean, this town is like, it's tinder dry and it's mid-August, everything's ready to I thought they were playing, you know, they played well enough to win. They took it to overtime. They didn't win. It's a 1-1 tie. The general feel or temperature of this city is they're down 3-0 in the series, and I push back against that because even though the loss was disappointing, it's a 1-1 series tie, and Chris Knobloch has been really good at rallying the troops after a disappointing outing. I suspect we're going to see a stronger effort defensively and overall tonight. Do you agree?
I sure hope so, because I'll be honest, and I think we've talked about this, I just think that's the key to the series. I'm not sure scoring for the Oilers means anything in this series. If they can keep it down to like 22 shots for the Kings every night, I guarantee you they win the series. But I look a bit at last year. I mean, you'd have to help me out. 2-2 after 4 games. I think the Kings had won their 2 games in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
And that, oh boy, that was going to be a close series. And the others just went boom, boom, and won the last 2 games, and that was the end of that. I liked a lot of things I saw about game 1. I didn't like 4 goals. I get it. 2 skates, Bouchard skate, Nurse's skate. I get it. I still don't like 4 goals, but I liked a lot of I didn't like a lot of things I saw in game 2. In fact, I didn't like hardly anything I saw in game 2, unless his name is Dylan Holloway. So I think there has to be some different thinking moving forward. But, and you mentioned Chris Knobloch, I like that he's the guy maybe helping that different thinking moving forward. And Paul Coffey, for sure.
Steve Lansky, our guest on the Lowdown with Low Tide on Sports 1440. I wrote on the blog today, Steve, about 1982. For me, it was a pivotal year for the Oilers. They'd beaten Montreal. And then they played in L.A., and in the next year they played in L.A. in 82, and the Miracle on Manchester happened. And there was a lot of talk about, you know, what in the offseason Glenn Sather would do. I went back and I read the old archives of the Hockey News, and he was talking right away about Yaroslav Pozar, who was a big, imposing player and more defensive than offensive, and what they were going to do. And I think that was a turning point, because at some point, the shock to the system was, my God, we lost to L.A. in the first round. We were supposed to win the Stanley Cup. And it took two more years for them to win it. But they started being more devoted and more focused on playing 200-foot hockey. And, you know, Glenn Sather did offload some players between 82 and 84 to make it a more complete hockey team. I don't know that this, and I'm not trying to compare, because they're different eras and obviously different qualities of team. But I do wonder whether, even though we're this late into the Connor McDavid era, whether the focus on defense and the attention to detail is what it should be.
I think it is not what it should be. And I think a big part of a coach's job is to be a teacher, not an X's and O's teacher, but a psychological teacher. Now, Glenn Sather had a perfect scenario in that he had players who were ready to be psychologically taught. Now, when you lose to LA in five games and they have the Miracle on Manchester and Darrell Evans is skating down the ice, which I think if I ever saw Darrell Evans in person, I'd probably punch him. Harboring Al, still harboring. But I think that's your job. And Glenn knew he had to teach these guys psychologically. Yeah, they won the Cup 2 years later. They were in the Stanley Cup final the next year. Now, they got plowed by the Islanders, but still, again, you're learning a great deal by being in the Stanley Cup final. You're looking around the room, hey, guys, we're in the Stanley Cup final. You know, we didn't do everything we could do, you know, and then they see the Islanders all battered and bruised as they walk by the room in the famous story. They learn again psychologically. You have to, you know, I can't say to you, Al, you have to be more focused. You have to learn psychologically. That doesn't mean anything to you. I have to be able to teach you how to do that. So basically, I think what you're asking is this team still teachable? I think they are, based on what I saw when Chris Knobloch took over. Are they teachable to the point where they can make the change on an every single day, three most important words I said, every single day basis? I'm not sure. And I think that's where the problem continues to lie.
All I want to know from that 82 series is, what was Gary Unger thinking?
I love Dungy, but, you know, listen, without that series, there aren't five cups. That's how I look at it. That's the only way, right? Without them beating Guy Lafleur and the Montreal Canadiens at the end of their great run, there aren't five cups. Everything happens for a reason. Otherwise, I just want to punch Darrell Evans. So I have to let some of that stuff go and just assume the world unfolded as it should.
Do you think, I want to ask you this because I think it is important, just on a personal level, though, not hockey level. The game starts at 8 o'clock tonight, our time, right?
8:30.
Okay. So when you were out in Toronto, did you game plan to stay up that late, or did you just know you were going to fall asleep in the comfy chair?
What, are you kidding? Did I game plan? I was a producer for 45 years. I ate at structured times. I napped at structured times. Of course, you already know the answer to this. Of course I game plan. You don't fall asleep in the Lazy Boy in the third period. What kind of a fan is that? Of course I game plan. And then I also game planned that when I looked at myself in the mirror the next morning, I tried not to think, oh my God, you look dead. I tried to get past that. But I'm telling you, man, that 2017 is the one that almost killed me, because it was it. You got to help me. First, it was San Jose. Then yep. It was Anaheim.
Yeah, it was Detroit, San Jose, Anaheim, I think.
Anyway, All I know is there were games that were ending at 1:30, quarter to two.
Yeah.
That is not a structured plan for success. It just is not. And some of those days I had to be up at like 7 o'clock the next morning, ready to go, ready to do something functional. It's not a sustainable model. I can tell you that right now. So I am at this moment, I am in heaven that this thing starts at 8:30. That's the greatest thing in the history of the world for me.
It's funny because when you're young, it doesn't matter. Like when you're 20 and you're up till 2 a.m. But I remember in 06 when they scored and I was so mad and I went to bed and Detroit did. And I didn't know that the puck had gone underneath the net and not into the net legally. And so I'm tossing and turning and I'm stirring. And my wife's like, "What? Why are you so upset?" I'm like, "Ah, the Oilers lost. Damn it all." And the next day she brings me the paper and she goes, "You liar." And Hemsky had scored an over. I didn't see any of it. And I was so mad at myself, Steve.
And so there's a perfect example. So what did we learn? We never go to bed in a fit of, "Oh my God, click, turn off the TV and go to bed." No, you have to let the whole drama play out. You have to absorb it all. And you know, it's funny, you're saying that and I'm thinking, if sports isn't the greatest thing in the world, I don't know what the hell is. Because what else can drive us to these manic up and down emotions and excitement and talking about things that, you know, to many, many people, it don't matter at all. But to us, it's like life and death every day.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
And if you said to me, "I'm taking sports away from you," you might as well take everything away. Because to me, it's everything.
It's true. And it also connects us. Like if I say Blue Monday, you know, nobody who is knows me, they know exactly what I'm talking about, right? Like exactly.
You know what? I work with Steve Rogers, and I never had the guts to ask him about that. But I probably should have.
I asked.
He gave up that ball to Rick Monday, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He did. He was. I asked Dick Williams about it. I met him in Arizona, and I asked him about that pitch, and he said that Gary Carter had told him that he wanted it middle, like in, not middle in, and right. Rogers threw it. He just missed. Like he missed the pitch, and you know what are you going to do, right? Like, but I mean, it ruined my life, Steve.
You know what? And what other parts of life do you remember this one? What would it take from Rogers to wind up till that ball's over the fence? Maybe 8 seconds?
Yes.
7 seconds? What other parts of life? It's 7 seconds, and we think about it for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
That's the beauty and the crazy of sports in one big pile.
It is. And by the same token, I remember my friend Lauren Starko and I, when Dave Lumley split the heart of the net in 1984, and it meant that Patty LaFontaine could score as many goals as he wanted, but he was never going to beat the Oilers in that game. We cried, we hugged like we were idiots, but it was the best thing ever.
I can still feel my feeling that night because you and I talked about it in the studio about a month ago. I can still feel the feeling when the Oilers won that game, and it was like something just opened in my chest and I felt like my chest was going to explode. It was so full of excitement and I was working, so I kind of had to keep it in, but I can remember that feeling now, and it's going to be 40 years in about 3 weeks.
Yeah. Truly amazing. And you're right about sports. And so tonight, I mean, we're just in the first round of the playoffs, but it's the same build, right? Like, it's the same feeling. Like, you know, the Edmonton Oilers should be going deep. They should be winning the Stanley Cup. And if they're not, then the story behind it is what we'll remember, good or bad, heartbreak or wonderful release of whatever. It will be a story we remember for all time.
And that's the hard part about it. I would way rather be cheering for a team that, you know, in 2006, weren't the Oilers 8 and Detroit was number 1, I think, in the West?
Mm-hmm.
I would way rather be cheering for that team, because anything you got is a bonus, rather than going in. And I remember when the Oilers, you know, 85, 87, 88, 86 even, what a series that was, with Calgary, when you expected them to win and they didn't, that to me was just a sledgehammer to my entire body and my psyche. Like, how is this happening? How are we having to endure this? And this is kind of that situation now. To me, I feel like they should be able to beat the LA Kings quite easily.
Yeah.
And it is very difficult to watch sometimes.
That's why my two favorite moments in Oiler history are Glenn Anderson scoring in Game 7 late in 87 because it meant everything. And then the other thing was in 87 when Wayne Gretzky passed the cup to Steve Smith, it meant everything. And if you endured 86, then you know why 87 was so special.
And you know, it's funny. I know there are people who are listening now that are like, oh my God, can you guys stop talking about the 1980s? No, it's not possible, because we were in those formative years when it just meant everything to us. And we had the good fortune. There's no way to sugarcoat it. I don't care about the Montreal Canadiens in the 50s. I don't care about the Islanders in the 80s. We watched the best team in the history of the National Hockey League. And for you would expect us not to remember the minutia moments of that. If you expect that, you don't understand sports and you don't understand hockey.
1987 is the best team I ever saw.
You know what? I'd have to sit down and make notes. For me, I loved 84, because 84 was a team that really, are they going to beat these Islanders? Son of a gun, they are. And that will always have a huge place in my heart.
How tight was your sphincter when LaFontaine scored that second goal?
Nothing. It was nothing. I knew they were going to win. There was no way. there was no way the Islanders were going to win. And I that makes me smile so hard. I knew there was no way they were going to win that series.
Love
and
it.
I'm so happy we were right.
Love it. Love it. All right. Thank you, my friend. Be good.